Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Got J.K. McKay, Director of Football Operations for the AAF, coming up in about 15 minutes. Peter Fagan, President of the Milwaukee Bucks, after that. So a jam-packed last hour here on CBS Sports Radio, where the toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico to go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Derek in Arlington, Texas. Derek, you're on CBS Sports Radio. What's up?
Hey, thanks, man. I think you bring up some good points, man. It's okay to be skeptical about this league and the XFL. I mean, the NFL is a monster. But here's why I'll tune in and watch tonight, and I'll give it a chance. To me, man, it comes down to individual stories and players. And a previous caller hit on it. If you had if you're a huge college football fan and there's a player that you loved, you'll follow that player. So I think it comes down to individual players. If they can hit on that, we talk about the quality of the league and the level of play. If you have a player that hits and there's compelling storylines, I think people will watch. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think with every entertainment product, you need some sort of, story, drama that draws people in, and you hope you can find that rather than, like, I just don't think putting football on television is going to do it. I think there has to be a hook beyond that, and those aren't things you have to force. Again, I'm not saying you script it or push it a certain way, but they need something to develop that will bring people in, get people interested, get people talking about the league, and I'll talk to the director of football operations for the AAF about that coming up in just a few minutes. Usually we do something called another one at the end of the show where I get to everything I have not as of yet, but because we got two really good guests coming up, we're going to do that now, so because I'm not going to really have much more time to just opine about the various topics in the sports world. So everything I have not gotten to, we'll get to now. All right, Anthony, what's up first?
So on Wednesday, Kevin Durant clashed with the media again over free agency questions. Was Durant's rant warranted? Did Durant make some valid points?
Yes and no. It's warranted in the sense of, I understand from a player's perspective where it gets tiresome. Because again, this goes back to what I was saying about LeBron. We spend so much time talking about things. There's so much content needed that anything becomes a story, right? Like anything can be clickbait. Anything can be fuel for discussion and dialogue or debate, you know? Like, and that has to be endlessly aggravating. Like, for instance, when Kevin Durant said his toxic environment quote about LeBron, he probably shouldn't have used the word toxic, right? That word has a negative connotation. What he was trying to say, I think, was that there's a lot of attention that comes around. It can be stressful. And that's a fair point. But when you say toxic, that sticks. And then people talk about it and he thinks, oh man, I was just talking to somebody and like, why is this a massive story? Like, I understand that. At the same time, you got to be real, KD. Right? You can't pretend people can't ask you about your free agency. You know, that's a real topic. And they haven't. When's the last time Kevin Durant's been approached about that? The beginning of the season? And he said, hey, guys, I don't want to talk about that right now. I'll deal with that at the end of the year. And people were cool. They let it go. But when Kristaps Porzingis gets traded, and there's all this smoke linking you to New York, and you then go ghost, you don't think people are going to talk about it? And ask you about it? That's a valid question. You have to answer it. Sorry. You can answer it how you want. I don't care how you answer it. If you want to just say, hey, my mindset's on winning the championship, I'll deal with that in the summer. That's how everybody answers those questions. But you can't say it's not a valid question, especially when this is the second time he's gone radio silent this season. He's done it twice. The first was after the Draymond thing. He just doesn't talk to reporters for days. We see the game, dog. We know what's going on there. You don't want to talk about it, so you're avoiding them. Because Durant is particularly sensitive to those topics, or aware at least of that, what's going on. Like, when I say something about Kevin Durant, I always wonder if he's listening, you know, or reading or consuming it. And I've made the case that I think Brooklyn would be a good landing spot for Kevin Durant because it gives him the New York area without the pressure of doing it for the Knicks and without the history of dysfunction within the management, and to be the face of the franchise. Because a lot of people are bringing up, if this is going to bother you, how's he going to handle the New York media? And we got some insight into, you know, him from way back when. What was the headline? It was in whatever the Oklahoma paper is called. It said Mr. Unreliable back when he was playing for the Thunder, and he took offense to that. That was, a precursor of what was to come. That was foreshadowing of what was to come. Dude is particularly aware and particularly sensitive to what's said out there. So he has a valid point that a lot of the media is creating its own, you know, it's a machine that's creating its own content by just constantly putting stuff out there or grabbing portions of a quote or misinterpreting or taking things out of context to make stories. That's a valid point. At the same time, his free agency is a valid question at this moment, and he's ducking the questions. People are going to ask him about it. Them's the breaks.
So the Grizzlies traded Marcus Gasol to the Raptors. The Bucks acquired Miritich from the Pelicans in a three-player deal, and the Sixers went all in with the Tobias Harris addition. Which East team made the best deadline deal, and who's the favorite now to come out of the East?
Two separate questions. I think the first one is Philadelphia. Look, Tobias Harris is an excellent player, can shoot the ball. There's a different kind of player than the other guys they had. He should help their floor spacing. And on paper, their starting five is now excellent. Just absurd, really, top to bottom. They still, depth-wise, there could be a few issues for Philadelphia, but this feels like the final product of the process, right? Like, all that time, it's now, this is it. This is going to be the team. Can this team win a championship? Maybe. Can they compete for a championship? You would hope so. Over the next several years, when you've got Embiid and Simmons and Butler and Harris. So I think that the Sixers made the best deal for just pure impact. As far as who's going to win the East, right now, that it's fascinating because I don't know. I mean, I still give Boston a little bit of an edge because they've been there and done that, and they have Brad Stevens, and they're deep, and they can shoot, and they have length. And Kyrie Irving, of all the players in the Eastern Conference, is the guy I trust most when it's money time. But Milwaukee has been excellent all season, and I've sort of been skeptical, and I'm still a little skeptical in the postseason when things get tight. You know, Giannis hasn't gotten to that point in his career yet where he's getting his own shot. Does that come back to bite them? But by every statistical measure, they're a truly elite team. Defensively, point differential, shooting, Giannis is a monster, even if there are, you know, things he needs to refine about his game. And then you also have, as I just mentioned, Philly. Toronto's the one I don't quite put on the same level as those other three. I would now put Toronto in fourth. But Gasol's a good player. I mean, it's if those four teams match up, we should, and they should. There's no reason they shouldn't. The Eastern Conference playoffs should be totally, totally dynamic. At this point, I'd give the smallest edge to Boston, but basically, you could tell me you pick Milwaukee, you could tell me you pick Philly, you could tell me you pick Boston, or you could even tell me you pick Toronto, and that's perfectly reasonable.
I will fit in a couple more real quick. So the Mavericks traded Harrison Barnes on Wednesday mid-game to the Kings, and this seemed to bother several players, including LeBron James. Do you have any issue with guys being traded mid-game?
No, I mean, I guess I don't really. But I think the points were actually valid. Everybody made the point. Like, and this is, like, I never get why fans sometimes seem to side with ownership so much. You know, when the players are really, the players are more like you than the owners are. You know, your life is actually more similar to the players than the owners. So if they can do that to the players, why do people have a problem with the players taking their destiny into their own hands? And I think that was the broader point that everybody was trying to make. Could it have behooved them to maybe wait, either get it done before the game or wait till after the game to announce it? Yeah, probably. Is it the end of the world? I don't think so.
All right, finally, next Thursday, 14th of February, it's Valentine's Day.
Uh-oh.
You have anything planned for your lovely wife?
I do not.
No?
No. We've been together too long. I still got to do that?
You have to do anything?
No, I don't think so. Maybe, like, that day we'll go to dinner or something. Hey, you want to go to dinner? Or maybe I'll, like, pick up, like, you know, go to the grocery store and get a flower or something.
All right. So with Valentine's next Thursday, what's your favorite romantic comedy of all time?
Ooh, okay. Romantic comedy. It's not my favorite genre, but there's got to be one that pops right to the top. You need to give me these questions.
Well, one of my
advance.
Favorites, Groundhog Day. We had that last Saturday. Yeah, it was Groundhog Day.
No, it would be one that's more like in the comedy vein. I guess Groundhog Day is. I just haven't seen that in a long time. You know what's a movie that... All right, I'm going to give it... This is not my favorite, but it's going to be my hold answer because this is not the one that I would typically say. 13 Going on 30 is not a movie that I would typically like, but I really did enjoy that movie, and typically, like, romantic comedies are not my favorite because they leave the comedy part out. But then there's all these other ones like movies like Knocked Up, where the I think the last third falls off a little bit, but that's a genuinely funny movie. Where I'm trying to see if I can find some other ones that might pop into my head. Like, what qualifies exactly as a romantic comedy? Do you have any more?
Sleepless in Seattle,
no,
Bridget
no.
Jones' Diary,
no,
Pretty
no, no.
Woman.
They're way too much about feelings. I want it to be about laughs.
When Harry Met Sally?
No, too many feelings.
Crazy Stupid Love?
No, too many feelings. Laughs.
Annie Hall is one of the best.
Laughs. No, I still want more laughs.
Annie Hall is hysterical.
Couples Retreat.
Couples Retreat? No, I would go to 40-Year-Old Virgin or The Wedding Singer if we're going to be talking about that kind of movie, right? Yeah, those are the best ones I got off the top of my head. If I think of a better one, I'll give it to you. But I do have to get to the break so we can get to the guest. Wedding Crashers, does that count? That's another one where the last third of the movie falls off, though, to me. All right, it's the Robin Lundberg Show, and it's here on CBS Sports Radio. I'll be talking to J.K. McKay, Director of Football Operations for the AAF, coming up next. I mean, it's a lot of movies would qualify as a... Like, is Happy Gilmore or Billy Madison a romantic comedy? There's, like, romance involved. Could they count as romantic comedies? Because then I might go with one of those two movies. There's a romantic aspect to the story, at least. It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. Let me add Princess Bride to that list of romance. I think that counts as a romantic comedy. The whole thing is like about their love, like as you wish, right? I know people love football. How much do they love football? Enough to watch professional football after the NFL season is over? I'm joined now by J.K. McKay, Director of Football Operations for the AAF. And J.K., first off, let me say I think you guys were smart to not try to take down the NFL or go against it and to run this league after the season. But aside from it just being football, what would you say is the selling point for the AAF? How do you think you're going to bring people in?
Well, and I agree with you. I mean, you know, people have tried to go against the NFL in the past. I think it's been a mistake. We're just trying to be complimentary. I think what's different, aside from some of the rules, which we can talk about that are I think are kind of interesting and our fans will like, is for me, it's all about opportunity. And I've seen so many players over the years. I had one way back in the XFL the first time around in 2001, a guy named Tommy Maddox. And who came into our league and at that time and played extremely well and ended up getting a nice contract in the NFL with the Steelers. It's about opportunity, and a lot of times these guys, as Tommy told me back then, I said, why hadn't you made it in the NFL? He said, I never got to play. And I think this is an opportunity for guys that maybe didn't shine in practice in the NFL. 81%, I think it is, of our players have signed NFL contracts, so they're all right on that edge. And to me, it's about opportunity and hopefully about presentation. And we'll put some really quality football on the field, amazingly enough, starting tonight.
Do you think so you're saying you believe people will get invested in the stories of some of your individual players?
That's exactly right. I think so. I think we'll create stars. I mean, it just tends to happen. I mean, in week one, the average football fan is going to watch our games, hopefully being entertained by them and impressed by the quality of play, but they're not going to know who a lot of these guys are. People that are down in the weeds in football, they know who they are because, like I said, most of them have been in an NFL camp. And through our allocation system, we've tried to address that by allocating players nearby where they went to college. You know, the Alabama players will be playing for Birmingham, and players will be allocated to teams in their areas, so that there'll be some fan recognition. But over time, we need to create some stars.
You mentioned rule changes. Which of those do you think is most significant? Which one do you think is going to be the one that the fans watch and go, all right, I'm into this?
I think the one that will stand out, and I hope it happens in week one, is, you know, we have no kickoff, but that's not a big deal, actually. That's just a health and safety issue, and we decided, you know, the NFL has basically mostly touchbacks anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So we said no, but we needed to come up with something. If you got in a situation where you needed an onside kick, we needed to come up with something, and an onside kick is even less safe than a kickoff in terms of the health and safety of players. So what we came up with is we're calling it an onside conversion play, and with certain limitations in time of the game and that sort of thing, you can, after you score, elect to go for an onside conversion, which means we will put the ball on your own 28-yard line, 4th and 12. You have to make the 40-yard line. If you pick up the first down, you keep the ball. If you don't, you turn it over. So it's a high-risk, high-reward play. I think you'll see some teams trying it, obviously, late in games when they're behind. And I think that can be a really exciting play. And it's a much more exciting play, frankly, than an onside kick, which is, you know, largely luck.
Well, and onside kicks have become almost you never see them recovered by the kicking team anymore, at least in the NFL, because of the rule changes. I'm just curious, a little quirk, like why the 28? I mean, I'm not criticizing at all. I'm just curious.
Actually, a lot went into that. And some of that is relationships that we have in the NFL has actually studied this. And if you went 4th and 15, that would be about the same odds as an onside kick, which is about somewhere around 12%, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided, originally we were going to do that, and then we decided let's make it a little bit more attainable so that maybe teams will be tempted to go for it just a little bit more. So we thought 4th and 10 wasn't enough, and 4th and 15 was too much, so we came up with 4th and 12.
Got it. Robin Lundberg talking to J.K. McKay, Director of Football Operations for the AAF here on CBS Sports Radio. One other little quirky question I have for you. I understand there's not going to be any extra points, right? So teams are going to go for two. Was there any thought to just making the twos ones? Why keep the increment of two?
You know, that's very interesting that we talked about this. Heinz Ward, who's involved in our league in terms of player relations and working with us, that was his idea, actually. We talked about it. And that's something we got far enough along with this go for two thing that we decided let's take a look at that maybe next year. That's an interesting idea. Why isn't it just one if it's a conversion? I hear what you're saying.
All right, yeah, that was my first thought. It was like, if you're eliminating the one, why is it then two? All right, and then another thing I think that actually could benefit you guys is looking at how do you expect to, you know, we hear about it with baseball all the time, not as much about football, but I think sometimes there is a little bit of a pace issue with football. Like in the NFL, for instance, it doesn't affect it as much when people are watching on a Sunday because they're watching Red Zone or they're consuming multiple games or, you know, they're doing whatever they're doing. But when the one game is by itself in prime time and there's a penalty and a review and then a commercial and all that, I think some of it can get broken up. It can become a little jarring. I understand you're trying to do stuff to both shorten the length of games and maybe pick up the pace.
Absolutely, we are in a number of different ways. We're limiting coaches' challenges on replays to two per game. The play clock is 35-second clock. We're trying to get these games in 2.5 hours. We won't have any TV timeouts. So this thing's going to move along really at a great pace. We've already had a couple, actually four preseason games in San Antonio a couple weeks ago just to take a look at how it works. And we were coming in right at 2.5 hours, which is really a good thing. In addition, we've got an overtime rule that I think people will find interesting, but it's part of the design of the overtime rule is we need to get these games over and get them in quickly, at least particularly during the regular season. As we move to playoffs, obviously that would be different in terms of the overtime. But we're very, very aware of the need and the desire of people to get these games in a reasonable period of time.
You know, obviously you're excited and the launch is coming up and you're doing whatever you can to make sure this is off the ground running and that it appeals to fans. What's your biggest concern, though? Do you have like one, concern that stands out above the rest?
I don't know if I have one. I have about 100.
Yeah.
I'm worried about everything. I'm excited about everything, too. I think we're in a good place. I always say we'll drop some balls as we go here, but we'll just try to pick them up real quick. There'll be mistakes made, but we've worked really hard to put this together. I always worry from a quality of play standpoint. I always worry about officiating, but we have Mike Pereira and Dean Blandino, some of the best in the business, overseeing our officiating. And when I say I worry about too many flags. So I hope we don't have too much. I feel like about that. In all areas of football, I think I worry about officials and too many flags.
Yeah, definitely too many flags, unless there's not a flag on the decisive pass interference in the NFC Championship game.
Well, we're addressing that, too. I don't know if you've heard, with something that's going to be kind of revolutionary. I think people will find interesting. We've added an additional official. We're calling him a sky judge. He will be in the press box. He will be like any other official on the field, though, and he will be able to rectify situations like the one you're talking about, blatant pass interference penalties that are missed. He will actually be able, it's not a replay official, he'll actually be able to call the penalty. In addition, he'll be able to call penalties that relate throughout the game that relate to player safety, if there's helmet-to-helmet, those sorts of things. The sky judge will be empowered to call that penalty himself.
Well, JK, man, I really appreciate your time today, and good luck with the launch of the league.
Well, thanks so much. Appreciate it, man.
You're listening to The Robin Lundberg Show.
Is it Uchi Wally Wally, or is it one Mike? Girl, lost a shorty, owe you for ice. Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. I wonder if the Jay-Z Nas beef would be viewed differently if this had been the third record released after, like, Takeover and then Ether, and then if it was this instead of Super Ugly, which he put out, for anybody who doesn't remember. This was a great, great song. I'll argue the way it was remembered, I guess Nas won that battle, Jay-Z won the war, but the Takeover is the best record released from that whole period, in my humble opinion. If I do say so myself right here, and it is my radio show, it's got my name on it. So my opinion is the one that matters the most right now. 855-212-4227. If you want to get your opinion in before the end of the show, expecting to talk to the president of the Milwaukee Bucks, Peter Fagan, coming up in just a second here. And, the Bucks, it's interesting. They won again last night. I bet on them last night. 7.5-point favorites on the road. So that shows you what they are right now and how well they've been playing. Yet I still think there's like a modicum of doubt around that team where you look at them and you haven't seen them do it before. I think that's one thing. I also think Coach Budenholzer, he's did a great job in Atlanta. But those teams, when they got to the playoffs and it was a one team versus one team matchup and teams could specifically game plan for what they did, they didn't do as well in the playoffs after some great regular seasons for Atlanta. So there's that skepticism. Then I also have a little bit of when they get to crunch time and somebody has to create their own shot in a tight game. Can Giannis do that as of this moment? And he's just a sensational player, but he doesn't have that reliable jump shot yet. So that would be another reason to doubt. But when you're just looking at plain record, when you're looking at point differential, when you're looking at, basically any way to measure how quality a basketball team is, Milwaukee is the real deal. And I'm joined now by the president of the Milwaukee Bucks, Peter Fagan. And Peter, first of all, congratulations on the season. Second of all, how often do you say, man, I'm glad we drafted Giannis?
I mean, I don't think a day goes by when we don't just smile. We were a bunch of us were in Dallas last night just watching five or six plays after we've seen him play thousands of minutes that we just kind of smile. We don't even have words anymore.
Do you sense that people doubt your team at all in the sense that I was just sort of talking about it? By any statistical measure, they're an elite team. You have a superstar. You have shooting. You have length defensively. But we haven't seen the Bucks do it in the playoffs. You know, Giannis hasn't exactly had those moments where he's creating his own shot at the end of games. Coach Bud has been sensational, but those Atlanta teams didn't exactly do it in the playoffs. Do you think any doubt of your team is warranted?
Well, first of all, you know, we sit here, and it has been a while since we kind of went past the first round. We are having a season. We have 41 wins before the All-Star break. We have a little kind of small city, you know, underdog spirit where where I tell you, you're certainly not getting the press or the appreciation that you think you might with this team that is in the top five in every category, that is winning by a margin of 10-plus points, and by all other standards, like, it's just really is statistically the best team in the NBA. So it's just incredible. But at the same time, listen, like, it all ends up in the playoffs. So we think this is great. We want to have an unbelievable season. But you're right. All of the equity is driven by how you do at the end of the season.
You know, it's interesting because I could look at it two ways. I could see, you know, I referenced the Atlanta Hawks, obviously, because of, you know, the coach and those teams being great in the regular season, not so great in the playoffs. But, you know, another team that comes to mind when I'm thinking about Milwaukee is the 2011 Dallas Mavericks, where that was a team that maybe people, it just, like, they had to keep proving it. But eventually you're like, oh, that was a great team. And do you think there's any similarities there? Because it's not like you don't have other good players on the team, but there was Dirk on that team and then a bunch of really good players. And you have Giannis on this team and a bunch of really good players in shooting.
Yeah, I think it's really similar. I think if you think about those teams, you know, Miami at the time was probably a lot like your Golden State. You know, the favorite team, hey, they had built this team. Dallas had an awesome team. You know, they had Jason Kidd that year. They had Dirk. It was building. They kind of finally got the credit deserved, like, in the NBA Finals when they won. You know, I think we've got the same type of story. When you look at the team, you certainly look at Giannis, but, you know, he's got his co-star, all-star, and Chris Middleton. He's got Eric Bledsoe, who's also having, you know, an all-star season. And then there's not much you can't say about, you know, what Brooke Lopez has meant to this team. Not only on the offensive side with threes, but, I mean, the way we're playing defense and how key he is to the defensive side. So I think the similarities are the same, but less, more about kind of just not at the top of the list. When you watch highlights at the end of the night, you know, we could win by 20. The Bucks are going to be the second or third story instead of the first story.
You know, Brooke Lopez, you bring up, he does deserve some mention here because, to be honest, I thought he was a guy from a bygone era, and he's totally reinvented his game. Talking to Peter Fagan, president of the Milwaukee Bucks here on CBS Sports Radio. Now, the Eastern Conference, the rest of the East, has made some moves. LeBron said you guys saw that he wasn't there anymore and decided to all go for it. What did you make of the moves made by, I mean, obviously your team made one in acquiring Mirotić, but the moves made by, say, Philadelphia and Toronto and where Boston is right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've got really strong, unbelievable teams that are all going to fight for the East in a pretty competitive way. I mean, Philly is deeper than they've ever been, and they started before the trade deadline as a pretty deep team. So, you know, we sit there and really say, like, it's important to really end up, you know, in one, two, or three to have some good momentum into the playoffs, because it's going to be a tough time to get out of the East.
Is there, you know, any particular team or player that you're worried about, or do you see all those teams on equal footing?
I think, you know, and Coach Bud kind of, you know, says this, that we worry about ourselves, like, in a big way. So we don't necessarily take it team by team. We think they're all strong. But, you know, for us, if we're playing really well, you know, we should be able to take the East.
You feel that way unequivocally, like you have the best team in the Eastern Conference. Now, if you feel that way, let me take it a step further, because it's almost like people talk about the East as like the second place prize, but that's not what you guys are playing for. There may be reason to believe Golden State is more vulnerable this year between a lack of depth, you know, trying to work Cousins in, Durant's situation, just all the myriad of factors, attrition, you know, playing that deep every year. Do you see Golden State or whomever comes out of the West as beatable for your squad?
Listen, we think they're the conceptual favorite, but the reality is, I mean, we've been playing great, you know, winning basketball against the West Coast. We think much like the East, anybody that comes out of the West is going to have a pretty tough playoff run with a pretty competitive slot of teams. So for us, I mean, I think to go into it, and you know, you can ask John Horst and Coach Bud and all the players, like, you got to get there, and we can beat anybody.
Robin Lundberg talking to Peter Fagan, president of the Milwaukee Bucks, here on CBS Sports Radio. Now, the Bucks name came up with Anthony Davis, and I don't know where these reports necessarily come from. Sometimes I'm a little skeptical of whose agent's trying to feed information, which organization is trying to feed information. Nevertheless, there was a list of teams that was put out there that Anthony Davis was looking at, and the Milwaukee Bucks were on that list. What's your reaction to that?
I think our reaction is, like, we're pretty thrilled with the way we headed out of the trade deadline and happy with what we have. We'd love to be an attractive team, an attractive city, an attractive organization for everybody. It's what the owner's vision was to really build, like, a first-class gold standard operation. And I think, you know, when players start to have interest in specific teams and organizations, that's a great honor for those teams.
Your team owner did say, I think it doesn't make a difference if you're in Milwaukee, New York, or LA. The whole goal is winning. So we would hope it would be players like Anthony Davis and others who want to come to Milwaukee. And I've heard people bring up the tampering word with that comment, which I just think is ridiculous. Just like I thought it was ridiculous, people brought it up with LeBron when he was asked the question, you know, what do you think about possibly an Anthony Davis trade? And he said, yeah, of course, I would like Anthony Davis on my team. Do you find the tampering rules to be silly?
Well, I find the rules to be rules, so you'll not have me comment on the rules or mention players by name. But I think, you know, listen, I think we're all governed, and things haven't really changed that much. It's just the media and with social, it's gotten so much to the top of, you know, to top of mind, and it's kind of been said over and over again. But, you know, it'll continue to happen. You know, the interesting thing about the small markets, and we said that when our owners kind of bought the team 5 years ago, it was look at the great case studies. I mean, Oklahoma City, San Antonio. I mean, these markets have redefined, you know, what the success of a small market NBA team can be.
Player you can mention by name, and you did before, but let's circle back to Giannis for a second. It seems like James Harden has become the presumptive MVP again. Do you think that Giannis is being slighted in that conversation at all?
Oh, undoubtedly. I mean, I think how Giannis has to be the overwhelming favorite for MVP. I certainly get what Harden is doing is incredible, kind of on a scoring list. But I think, you know, at the end of the season and when you see the results of the team and what Giannis's contribution to the team would be in number of wins, in where we are offensively, where we are defensively, and where he is in the stats column across the board. I mean, you're talking to the wrong guy. Giannis is my MVP, you know, every day of the week.
It's got to be great to have not just such a great player, but a likable player. I thought he and LeBron, you know, it was entertaining when they went back and forth on that All-Star draft. How do you think he did there?
I mean, he was Giannis. we're just excited for the world to keep seeing him. I mean, this is a guy who is just like that. I mean, he's one of the smartest, funniest, and fun, you know, kind of guys. He's got, you know, he is 1,000% about basketball. If he's not basketball, he's with his family, and he's thinking about going back to playing basketball. And he keeps a pretty good mood about it, which is fun for everybody.
Peter, I really appreciate the time, and good luck the rest of the season. And congratulations on the season, regardless of what happens from here on out. It's been a great season for your team.
We appreciate it. Thanks very much. Go Bucks.
Peter Fagan, president of the Milwaukee Bucks, who I think people might not realize just how good a season they are having. I was saying it before. There's this level of skepticism, I guess, not having seen them do it in the postseason before, but they have the best record in the NBA. Number one. They have the best point differential in the NBA. Number one. And it's not close, by the way. Like, the Warriors are beating teams by 7.7 points a game. The Bucks are beating teams by 10.3 points per game. They are winning games by an average of more than double digits per game. They've got a guy in Giannis who is just an absolute beast in every stat column you can fill. They've done a nice job with the complimentary pieces. Middleton's had the great season, as he mentioned. They brought in Bledsoe last year. They got Brooke Lopez as a three-point shooter now, and Brogdon as a solid contributor. Defensively, they're number one in the NBA. Offensively, they're number three in the NBA. That they have a lot of shooting. I guess my one question about Milwaukee would be, is when it's tough, because you're not going to beat teams by 10 points a game in the playoffs. When it's those close games and it's getting to money time, can they get the buckets then? That's my, because every other question is answered. Are they elite defensively? Yes. Can they shoot the ball? Yes. Do they have a star player? Yes. Are they well coached? Yes. Like, the answer to all those questions is yes. I think the only question I have about that team is when it's go time, when it's money time. I know in Boston, Kyrie Irving, I've seen him do that in the toughest spot, maybe, the biggest shot in NBA history. Obviously, in the West, we know Golden State's got those guys. We know the Lakers have LeBron in moments like that. Even Philadelphia, like, I trust Jimmy Butler in those moments to create the shot when the shot isn't there. Can Milwaukee do that? And I think that's the one question that's out there. But they did beat the Mavericks last night. And the team that comes to mind when I'm thinking about this Bucks team, if things work out well for them, would be the 2011 Mavs. Are they that kind of team where they're one star with a bunch of not quite stars but really good players who complement that one star? Sometimes that's usually not enough to be dynastic, but it's been enough to win a championship. And maybe that's the case for the Milwaukee Bucks. I'm back next week in the same slot. I'm actually on tomorrow at 10 a.m. Eastern time as well, if you want to catch that. Appreciate everybody who's listening and listened. You can also get the podcast, cbssportsradio.com, and the audio page. It's the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio, or it has been.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.